Hello everyone. Recently I've been quite interested in the Marxist economist Paul Cockshott, and I've been reading his book here, How the World Works. And one thing I've been interested in particular, is the distinction between productive labour and unproductive labour that the classical economists like Adam Smith and David Ricardo, and later Karl Marx, of course, all made. They basically argued that services, that is, jobs that simply disappear into the air, one of the examples given is an opera singer who, upon singing, the words just disappear into space, or basically any service-based job that you can think of, being a servant for some private lord, something like this. This is not considered productive labour in classical economics. And the actual distinction that was being made was between jobs that actually produce a store of capital, that is, a job that has a physical commodity at the end of it, or a job that increases the stock of variable capital or a fixed capital. These are considered productive versus jobs that do not. And one of the points that Cockshott makes in his videos and in this book is that currently in neoliberal economics, this distinction goes away. Our economists, our economies, our government, the neoliberal consensus, if you want to put it that way, all basically say that all money made is productive, okay? All money made is productive no matter how you make it, and it all goes into the GDP calculation, and then the competitiveness, quote-unquote, of an economy is then based on, you know, GDP metrics like that, how much money is being made. Whereas the older economists and the Marxists and Cockshott argue, actually, this does not, a lot of the unproductive labour, a lot of the unproductive money that's made is not actually productive. Cockshott gives an example of a casino, right, where money is being made. It's clearly not productive. It doesn't actually give your society or your country an edge. Why I've been thinking about this is the example of, well, let's make a comparison. Iran. Iran has been a country under US economic sanctions literally since 1979. If you have a look at its manufacturing capacity, it has increased year on year pretty much since 1979. If you have a look at gas output, for example, it's a straight line going up. They have whole industries like the car industry as one example, which I would argue had Iran been under neoliberal, had it been part of the neoliberal economic world, the global community as they call it, I don't actually think that Iran would have a car industry at all. They would have just imported those cars from elsewhere. But because of sanctions, because a certain amount of economic autarky has been imposed somewhat artificially on Iran by the United States and its vassal states, Iran has had to develop the capacity to make things like cars itself. And then, this is kind of quite interesting, you have a look at the number of engineers that Iran as a country produces. These stats are quite old, but I did go and find updated stats, and you can see on a per capita basis and on a per 100,000 basis, as well as on a raw basis, Iran over indexes producing engineers. And why are they producing so many engineers? Because they need the know-how, they need the skills, they need the expertise to manufacture all of these things that they've had to do because they're under tight economic sanctions. The contrast in this country, you can actually pull up the exact same metrics. You can have a look at natural gas as one example. The UK has access to huge reserves of natural gas in the North Sea, but they have gone down year on year in almost the exact same time frame that the Iranian one has been going up. The UK one has been going down. I know for a fact that car manufacturing has been declining year on year in the UK. Big plant in Bridgend, which made Ford engines, I did a video on when that closed. Other examples too. And UK manufacturing has been declining, as we know, not even recently. From the years of Thatcher onwards, the manufacturing base has been hollowed out, sold off. If we have a look at engineers, again, if we have a look at the per 100,000 engineering output, you can see that the UK is massively below where Iran is when it comes to producing engineers. And you can actually see that rather than producing engineering graduates, people are funneled into, you know, social media and feminism degrees and humanities subjects and loads of other kind of soft skill subject. It's not encouraged in the same way that it is in Iran. And in fact, it's a big turnaround. You know, my dad is an Iranian engineer. And what's interesting about him is that he came over to this country in 1975 to study engineering, because Britain, I mean, partly it was political, of course. The Shah had a deal with the British government, but also Britain was seen as the best place to study engineering anywhere. And so he, you know, obviously a country with a fantastic tradition of engineering is Britain, best in the world. That is no longer the case in 2025. It's no longer seen in the same way. And again, it's a combination of politics and power, economic sanctions and always. But now, the equivalent person in Iran wouldn't come here to study engineering. They'd do it there. They'd actually do their training, you know, in the country itself. This strikes me as being quite significant, because if you think that our neoliberal economies are becoming more and more service-based, okay, i.e. just simply based on money generation, pure GDP, as opposed to what the classical economists would have called productive labour and manufactures, then it starts to make sense why some of these other places in the world are punching above their weight on the world stage. They're punching above their weight because they have an actual stock of real fixed capital in their countries. What I mean by that is, in lay terms, the factories are actually there. The machinery, the expertise and know-how how to use those machines are actually there. Okay? And having that, having the actual machines and the actual expertise how to use those machines, goes a very long way. Now, let's just pretend that there's a change of policy here in the UK. How long would it take to bring back some of those supply chains, to bring back some of those manufacturers to this country? Okay, and I had a look, and it takes between 5 and 10 years for a reasonably complex plant to be set up, once you've got the paperwork out of the way, once you've got all the planning and the safety stuff out of the way. It takes about 5 years to set up a factory. And then, of course, you need people, engineers and so on, who know how to use the stuff in that factory. Right? So it's like the idea that money is just factories in potential needs to be checked by the fact that all manufacturers take time to get up and running, and they also need expertise, training. So it strikes me that the neoliberal economies have been moving in a direction that simply strengthens its geopolitical rivals. It's not just Iran that's been on this trajectory, of course. It's China and it's Russia. Russia actually had a period where it became quote-unquote neoliberal under Boris Yeltsin, and then when Putin came in, kicked out the oligarchs, or he tamed the oligarchs, you could say. He also had a period where he pursued neoliberal economics, but now, again, forced by US sanctions, forced by the geopolitical situation, Russia has become more autarkic, and surprising so-called experts in the West, who point at its paltry GDP on paper and laugh, Russia has performed above its weight because of its excess manufacturing capacity. So it strikes me that the old distinction between productive and unproductive labor is not nothing. There seems to be something there. And modern economists who kind of write this off, or who consider it old-fashioned, don't seem to have an... like Paul Cockshott, he can explain what's happened there using his Marxist lens. Whereas somebody engaging in pure modern economics can't really explain what's happening through this method of seeing all money as productive. Clearly, there is a distinction between these two things. I know that neoliberal economists, from my years of having studied it and written a book on it, I know their answer is basically to scoff and to say, well, you know, that you're just fetishizing the manufacturing part of the economy, and you're ignoring all of those other parts that are absolutely vital, and the role of capital, blah, 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 blah. I understand their arguments. I just think that the other side at this point are just more convincing. You know, the results are there. You can actually just see them. And of course, part of the Trump platform was meant to kind of bring, like, actually had part of this thinking as well. It wanted to bring manufacturers back to America. How much of that is happening, I don't know. yes, this is an H. Upman half Corona, by the way. If you're, I know some people are always interested in what I'm smoking. Just a little one, very tasty cigar. Highly recommended. And this is something I may do a subsequent video on, truly looking at the difference between productive and unproductive labour. There's been other things. I'm looking at the UK-Iran comparison. I was interested to see this. I mean, you can take these stats with a pinch of salt. I think I'll put them here. But there were these IQ stats released recently, which had the same countries, Russia and Iran and China, near the top of this IQ league. And Britain was all the way, wasn't even in the top 20, wasn't even in the top 30. I think it was on 99 point something. And okay, you can always take IQ stats with a pinch of salt. And I'm sure if you looked into it, there'd be question marks. I'm always skeptical of IQ stats, as you know. But the fact that, okay, regardless of what biases there are, or regardless of what shortcomings there are, the fact that it's those countries also near the top there, and it's the not neoliberal economies, also then starts to question other long-standing assumptions, such as, if you have a look at this, Russia and China and Iran are meant to be countries that have been experiencing decades of brain drain. But what if that is not what was actually happening? Like, we think of it as brain drain, okay? But what if what was actually happening is that the bourgeoisie, the middle class with its attitudes and tastes, was simply the ones being shipped out, okay, and set to be a problem in another country, okay? If I think of the Iranian diaspora that has left Iran, most of these, you know, supposedly high IQ Iranians living elsewhere have been spending an awful lot of time as placard activists, okay, cheering on a cuckolded Shah, who, you know, was meant to come in and overthrow the regime. None of that happened. So, I don't know, maybe the Iranian population, even after losing its so-called brains of the middle class, actually found a way to improve themselves. Certainly, if you have a look at the manufacturing output, the number of engineers, and this IQ score, it strikes me that they haven't suffered that badly from losing, you know, the bourgeoisie. So it's an interesting thing. And of course, in China, they had successive purges, which were kind of wiped out a whole section under Mao and so on. A lot of those people were just wiped out. And of course, in Russia, under socialism, there were various purges too. And so it's just an interesting question. It's an interesting thing to consider. Anyway, let me know your thoughts on this. It's a fascinating area. I don't have all the answers, obviously. But I am interested. Like, I'm interested, for example, one of the things that Cockshot gets into is whether a barista, whether somebody working in a coffee shop is a productive labourer or is unproductive. Good question. I don't actually know the answer to that. I've considered some of the back and forth, but I still don't really know. Like, what would happen if Britain lost all its Turkish barbers, for example? Would the economy be worse off? All right. Pick up my new book, Applied Elite Theory. Pick up a course at the academic agency, and I'll catch you next time.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.